You're listening to An Introduction to the Catholic Life.
Buonasera.
And welcome to An Introduction to the Catholic Life. This is episode 11.
I was like, what can I do with fingers then? I was going to do your thing. Help me. I was like, I don't have 11 fingers.
Extra digit.
10 fingers. 11. Clicking the pen. So, it's episode 11. I'm James Farrell. I'm the designated driver today. Back to some off-road stuff.
Off-road driving.
Everyone's here. Any news? Anything happening? I'll open it up.
Open up the floor.
Open up a can of worms.
Well, as you may know, James, I travelled to London with you.
Whoa.
He can't remember it.
James has no idea. James and I went down to London for the March for Life UK, which was really good. It started off in a wee hotel that it took us a while to find. It was on Great. In Glasgow, we've got Queen Street. In London, they have Great Queen Street.
But I was trying to do one up.
I know. It wasn't even that great.
Nah. Rubbish.
Queen Street's been done up, actually, so ours will be Great Great Queen Street, because it's been refurbished, a couple of million pounds refurbished.
Yeah,
they just changed theirs to Rubbish Queen Street.
Rubbish Queen Street, yeah. But anyway, we went there, and it finished in Parliament Square with talks from kind of pro-life speakers around the UK, and it was brilliant, really well organised. There was a wee counter protest there, but I always enjoyed that kind of bit. Like,
was it?
Yeah. It was tiny in comparison to our march, but it's good. You know, if you're getting a wee bit of persecution on the side, you're doing the right thing.
Never needs a hobby.
I found mine.
Getting persecuted.
Catholics are just so used to being persecuted, they start liking it now. So.
No. If you're not being persecuted, then you're not doing something right. It's like you start getting persecution complex.
I think if you want to be persecuted in Scotland, you should either be a Catholic or a Partick Thistle fan. Or both.
Ooh. Speaking of which, not being in the best of moods this week. I was wondering if you were going to mention that or not. I was in a bad mood with the other three guys in the ICL group chat this week. And I was not in the best of moods at all on the Wednesday. Was it Wednesday evening? Wednesday afternoon.
A whole day ago.
I actually muted that conversation for about 10 minutes and then undid it.
Oh, did you actually?
I was quite uncharitable for about 10 minutes, yeah.
That's not like you, Rudy.
No.
That's good, though. I'm glad you took a time out. You needed it.
I needed it at work. I prefer my work to my friends for once. You know, it was a sad state of affairs.
You retreated into a safe space.
Where is your safe space, really?
It's at my desk, or under it these days.
I actually feel quite sad for you, to be honest.
How do you think I felt? I was there, I saw the whole thing.
Just really, really angry, that was the emotions
I could
read from your messenger group.
The display last night was pathetic. As a paraphrase. Most of it was communicated in GIFs.
It's usually Star Wars GIFs we always communicate in, seems to be. Mm.
So, what's the point? That's our topic today. But it's funny, I was listening to Bishop Robert Barron talking about a kind of similar topic, not the same, and I can't exactly remember what he was saying, but I wanted to use it to start this one off, because he said there's these memes going about Meta memes. Like, have you seen
this? I've not seen any of them, though. I'm out of touch.
I think it's the one with the brains, and then it goes down.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, yeah.
You get to like a meta state.
It's almost like enlightenment.
You get so deeper into it, don't you?
Yeah. So Sean's been saying it to me quite a lot. Oh, that's meta. Like, anytime you say something that's
really cryptic, or like really bizarre, like it takes you like 10 minutes to figure out a joke, that's meta. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Bishop Barron was saying, the meta question for this point, what's the point? The meta question is, why are you asking? the question, what is the point? So that's not the real question, but the question is, why would you ask that question?
Whoa.
Whoa.
Deep.
So that's meta. But the reason that you ask that question is because you realise that that your environment around you is not fulfilling you, or somehow you can see that there's more to life that's going on. So if you want to ask that question, then you are on the right track, as it were. I think it's a good starting point to even recognise that there is a question there.
If we want to put the question in a particular context, it's perhaps useful to look at some of the social trends going on in the UK, just for argument's sake. We've got a situation now where young people, young men in particular, are taking their own lives at a rate never before seen, rather tragically. We have rates of addiction which are sky high, be it of drug use, of alcohol, gambling, you name it. People are absolutely hooked on various temporal things which are distracting them from the really fundamental questions of their lives. And I don't think that's even necessarily a religious question either. It's something which you can understand at a human level as well. There are some things which we are better devoting our attention to than others. And if we want to tap into the numbers a little bit deeper, I think we also have seen in the last few months or so an attempt to answer some of those questions with the emergence of a man called Jordan Peterson over in Canada, who has really, really tried to answer some of these fundamental questions which people are asking. Why are we so unhappy? Why do we feel no sense of purpose? It's a very human question, but at the end of the day, it's a very Catholic question as well. And we can be confident in our faith that it does indeed offer answers to those fundamental questions about human nature. What is the point? Why are we here? Where are we going?
I think the culture we live in with this this atheistic culture we live in really fails to offer a foundation for morality and for good living in many ways. They don't. Hope is not something which comes from atheism very well. You know, if you take atheism to its conclusions, its final conclusions, then you know life is quite hard. If you're not having a particularly great life at the moment, then it's very hard to see past that, because what's ever going to change? You're kind of stuck in your own environment. You're stuck in your own circumstances, and there's not much hope. And I think that's what we see throughout culture now, that we are really entering into a generation which has got not much hope. You know, we were talking earlier on about off air about the about assisted suicide and these sorts of things, that we're finding more and more people, especially young men, are just losing hope in life.
And it goes to no wonder that there's no hope, because as you're saying, the foundations of the secular society we live in are, at the end of the day, bankrupt. And I remember I had a wee kind of discussion with a guy I was in school with, actually, and we were kind of talking about, you know, the point in life and all that sort of stuff. And he disagreed quite strongly with when I used to say things like, you know, like, well, atheism is morally bankrupt. And he used to get really annoyed with me. He says, no, the first time I heard the word nihilism, which I won't try and spell off on air because I'll get it wrong, but nihilism is basically there is no point to anything, and when you die, that's you go into the ground, you decompose, you become soil after a few hundred years, and that's it. And that is the bankruptcy of atheism, because that is the least hopeful thing that I can possibly imagine. And that contrasted with the hope of the faith, the hope of eternal life, is something that is the biggest contrast imaginable.
And that's part of the thing, isn't it? Because then you have everything comes to nothing. Like ultimately, we all die and become nothing. Like you said, we'll decompose in the ground and that's it. And then if there's any sort of morality, it's not objective. So it means that it's basically everything you see is good or bad must come from either a product of evolution or social construction. And then it's easy to see how living that way would get you quite down in the dumps, because ultimately what you consider to be right in your life or wrong is actually just a construct of society, which means it's actually not getting any value at all, or it's a product of evolution to keep our species alive, which is quite pessimistic and not a very, you know, happy place to be. But I think most atheists, at least the ones that I know, would kind of say that you just have to then make your own meaning, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way you move forward, and you can live a happy life. And like you said at the beginning, of course you can. You know, Christians don't say that all atheists are somehow bad people, because they're not, and they'll have many atheists will say they're very happy and they'll have a fulfilled life and what they see is fulfilling. But as Catholics, we would say ultimately that's your ultimate fulfillment's only going to be found in becoming a Catholic.
Yeah.
There is still something to be said about the innate goodness of human nature, and that is something which is completely turned inside out by modern morality and its expectations. We are in a situation now where virtue, as it has been known historically and traditionally, is termed as toxic. Toxic masculinity is a key phrase to remember in postmodern culture in particular. Faithfulness and loyalty are derided as being exclusive or old-fashioned or overly conservative or traditional. You know, if you're throwing out terms like this in popular culture and mass media, no wonder that young men in particular are taking their own lives. If you're asking them to be something which they are not, if you're asking them to turn away from that for which they were made, little wonder they become unhappy and they turn to addictions such as pornography, such as alcoholism, such as gambling. And it doesn't matter which end of the spectrum you belong to here. I would like to think that anyone would agree that addictions to gambling, to alcohol, to pornography, to drug use, all of these things are objectively bad in and of themselves. I would like to think that anyone could agree with that. But in order to prevent such a situation, in order to prevent such a reality becoming almost par for the course in the first instance, you really have to get to the bottom of it. It won't simply do to have a conversation about it. You really have to get to the bottom of it, and that ultimately brings you back to the question of God and the meaning of life.
Exactly. So that one phrase you said there, ultimately, they are missing the point of what they are being made for. These questions, if we look at it from a different standpoint, we can see that other animals, other creatures, are fulfilled in their environment. So, a little example of, you know, a cow in the field, chews grass all day, goes through its day every day, it's fine. There's no thought process going on in there that says, am I being fulfilled in this? It just is.
When's my next holiday?
Yeah, exactly. So that cow is in its right environment. Whereas we are finding that if we're asking these questions, are we in the right environment? Are we truly being fulfilled by our day-to-day life? So it leads to that question, what are we made for? Now, ultimately, as Catholics, we would say that we have a physical body, but we also have a spiritual soul as well. So that we are made of those two parts, and there is a part of us that is not made for this world, that is made for something else, which ultimately is God, which is what we would say as Catholics. So our fulfillment is going to be found in something else, which is not of this world, which is not going to be found here. So obviously, a lot of people in this search for fulfillment will look for the things that they can consume, and we will look for happiness, which ultimately doesn't last. Now, we're enjoying this cheese in front of us, but ultimately that's going to be gone, and we can eat as much of it as we want until we're sick, but it's not going to sustain us for an eternal happiness. So the real question is, when and where or how are we going to get this eternal fulfillment?
Well, I mean, that's exactly it. The word we've mentioned, unhappiness and happiness, a few times so far, and that's really the key to it. We're made, you know, that whole question of what is the point? What's the point in life? Why bother going on? It's a happiness the world cannot give. That was one of the readings just a few days ago, I think. The happiness the world cannot give, and that happiness is a relationship with a loving God. And a relationship to be realised in this world and indeed in the next. And we will be happiest, we will be fulfilled, we will find our environment when we embrace God in this life, in the Catholic life.
Yeah. So I guess you would say that the key environment for humans to flourish would be a life of grace with Christ and of prayer and ultimately within the Church. So like you said, James, we as humans, as evolved species, we can find some fulfillment in things like food and air and water, and then those natural things. But ultimately, we transcend that. We reach up out of that. And that's always an interesting point, I always think, when we're talking about evolution in terms of within Catholicism and how it can fit together. And at that point, if we are just evolved apes, why are we still not fulfilled with only those natural elements I spoke about, so with food, water, air, shelter, warmth, these things that keep us alive. At one point in history, humans came around and we started reaching out of that. We started thinking, abstractly, we started asking questions like, why are we here? What's the point?
Started getting a wee bit
meta. We started to create culture. We started to reach out, and it's this reaching up almost to something which isn't in our natural environment. So I think naturally humans do reach out, and we want more than what's around us. And we can't, like you said, exactly, we can't be fulfilled by what's around us. And that's what makes humans unique, I think, in comparison to the rest of creation, that we have that reaching out. So that's why we go to the moon. You know, we're not limited we are the only thing within creation which is over and above, and can't be restricted by our environment explicitly. So.
There's a danger, however, that we allow our environment to dictate our desires, and hence we needn't wonder why we are so desperately unhappy at the end of the day. We spoke before about numerous common addictions right across the Western world, I'm sure elsewhere as well, but something which I find to be particularly revealing, why is it that suicide rates in the material West are so much higher than they are in the third world? You know, people who have absolutely nothing in the third world, in South America and in Africa, nevertheless find a contentment there which we do not have in the West. There's a reason behind that. There was one story in particular which appeared over the last couple of days or so. It drew the attention of the Western press, and it was the story of a 104-year-old scientist called Dr. David Goodall, who took the decision to fly from Australia to end his own life in a Dignitas clinic in Switzerland. And this was a man who fought a court case a couple of years ago to be able to continue to work on the premises of a university institution in Australia. And yet the Guardian newspaper posted a video just yesterday. It was almost a sort of last hurrah for the professor, where he was laughing and joking and even singing with the journalists and the presenters and so forth, literally 12, 24 hours before he injected himself with a lethal dose, which ended his life just today, the day that we're recording today.
It was almost like saying that you've got it all and there's nothing else to be had. So you're saying the distinction between suicide rates in the Western world, which we where we seem to be comfortable, we should have the things that would make us materially happy. You know, this guy obviously had a great life, you know, he had a great job where he found his fulfillment in it, but ultimately he said that this is all there is, you know, and we have found that we're still left wanting. Yeah, and he ultimately cuts it short.
But I think, like, what you're saying is this idea of deifying work as well, that this would be, like, if you don't have a belief in God, then you end up putting all your trust in something which is material, which ultimately, as you said at the beginning, cannot fulfill you. And it's that famous quote almost everyone knows with St. Augustine, "You've made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you." But that's the thing, is, you know, from the Catholic perspective, that if you put your trust in anything which is material, then it's always going to betray you. You know, I had a great one of our friends, a friend of the podcast, Mickey McFadden. He was up at the weekend or the weekend before, and we were having a wee chat, and we were talking about vacation, and that's what we had a great conversation about. That, you know, that ultimately, even in marriage, I've found that, you know, you can't put your trust only in your spouse, because if you do, then you'll be disappointed. Because ultimately they can't fulfill you, only Jesus can fulfill you. This is the thing. And so if Naomi only trusts in her happiness by looking at me and thinking Connor will give me happiness in my life and that's all I need, then I will disappoint her, because I'm a sinner and I'm not going to do that. I will, you know, try my best, and we love each other, and this is our vocation we're in, but ultimately only Christ can fulfill us. And so I think that's the problem that you were all talking about with it in society, that people put their trust in something else, which is never going to work.
Mm. And that idea that St. Augustine touches on, you know, our hearts are restless until they rest in you, until they rest in God, is very clearly demonstrated by the lifestyles that so many people live. We've already spoken about, you know, addictions and even, you know, deifying work and all the rest of it. But there is, in that quote, you know, this idea that there is a God-shaped hole in our heart, if you like. Until we fill that God-shaped hole in our heart with God, we will be unsatisfied. But people tend to, in place of that piece where God fits into our life and gives and indeed gives meaning to our life, people tend to fill that with an infinite number of finite things rather than one infinite being. And that's where a lot of unhappiness comes. It comes from putting creations in the place of the creator.
Yeah, good. Exactly.
I think that would, I'd like to move that on, taking what you've said there, and just look at how we can find meaning in our life. So we're talking about how, you know, we transcend our environment. We, you know, that what that means is that our environment is actually in God. That's where we're going to find fulfillment. So how do we bring that into our lives, as it were, here? Because, you know, we're not going to be eternally happy until we are in heaven. Mm-hmm. So what do we do now? What do we do here?
Yeah. Bearing in mind, a fisherman's boat was everything for a man who lived 2,000 years ago in the Middle East, on the coast of the Middle East. If you were in St. Peter or St. Andrew's shoes and you had a strange man walk into your boat and tell you to cast your nets out for a catch, my goodness, you must have thought that either he was mad or there was something very special about this individual. Of course, thankfully, St. Peter and St. Andrew chose the latter of those two answers. And it brought a new depth to what was their work, their profession, what had, up until that point, been the foundation, the source of an awful lot of their family life, their social life, I'm sure, as well. Without it, they were nothing. And yet Christ takes that and he adds a new depth to it. And so he comes to this wonderful line, "Come with me and I will make you fishers of men." That gets to the root of it. St. Peter and St. Andrew were precisely where normal circumstances would dictate that they would find meaning in their lives, their profession. It was that which provided their families, their communities and so forth with sustenance, with economic means. Christ takes that and he makes it far more profound and deeper than it was before. The same is true now as it was 2,000 years ago, in any circumstance or situation.
And that's the thing. So I think for me personally, that was a turning point when I started to think about simple things like when you speak to someone, say you wake up in the morning, you're still at home and you wake up and you go down and speak to your mum, you know, that's an eternal soul you're speaking to. And ultimately you have the ability to make choices in your everyday life which could affect your eternal salvation for better or for worse. And that's a good thing, I think. And I mean that in a positive way, in the sense that if you wake up every day, like today, for example, I was just studying for exams. It's easy for me to go up and think, okay, I'm just going to do, you know, I'm not doing anything very important, so therefore I'll just kind of go on with it. But actually, if you look at it as in, you know, well, this is an opportunity for me to do some sort of thing with my time that would help me grow in holiness, then that's a good thing. It gives you purpose.
And that brings us to the deeper reality of the church as well, which gives us our purpose in a way which temporal powers simply cannot. There was a wonderful story I heard before. The day that Pope Benedict the 16th was elected in 2005, there was a great camera shot of Cardinal Francis George, the late Cardinal Francis George, who was at the time the Cardinal Archbishop of Chicago, and he was looking very thoughtfully across St. Peter's Square, and he seemed to be almost lost in his own thought, and he was asked later on by an interviewer, in this great moment when the Pope has just been elected, what were you doing looking out at the crowds? Why was your attention not on the man beside you? And he said, "I was looking across at Nero's Column and the city of Rome, and thinking of all of its history, all the suffering that came hand in hand with the Roman Empire. And yet I asked myself, where is Nero's successor? Where is Caesar's successor? When the successor of St. Peter is right beside me here." And I think that encapsulates the difference between temporal and eternal meaning so, so well, both for individuals and indeed for us as constituent members of the church.
So as part of that, we have a mission. And I think God wants us to be in that environment at the end. And part of our mission here is to get as many people there in the end as well, as you're saying, Connor. And it shows you why the church has been here for over 2,000 years now and is still going and will still be going till the end of time. But we were talking about this earlier on, just reflecting on that kind of, you don't understand what value you have. You don't understand what value you have in other people's lives. As you're talking about that 104-year-old man, made me start thinking about my granda who died at the age of 92. But at the end of his life, you know, he was worse off than this guy. You know, he couldn't walk, he was sitting in his chair, lost his sight. But the time spent with him was important in my life, you know, without a doubt. And he won't have realised at that time what his relationship meant to me. So, you know, you can say compassionately that these people should, you know, just their lives are over, their lives are useless now, there's no value there. But you don't understand the small things have like a massive impact. And I think we all, to God and ourselves an injustice by saying how small we are and how small our interactions are with each other.
I guess as Catholics, then we have a duty to say to people that in that kind of situation that you do have value, mm-hmm. that God created you for a purpose, and that's His. You know, the fact that you're still alive is He wants you to still be alive. He loves you, and He everything you do, even if it's not very much, He loves that. You know, and that, if that makes sense, I don't know if that's. But I just feel like sometimes those kind of people just need someone to tell them that you're loved. Mm-hmm. You know, like your life might seem to you quite insignificant and not quite unhappy, but actually you're loved by lots of people around you, and ultimately though. By God.
No man is an island, and at the end of the day, often it only takes one person to say you are here for a purpose. You do have some sort of use in this world and indeed the next. And so often it seems to be the case that young people in particular simply do not hear that. Young people in particular are so often told that truth is subjective, that there are no objective norms. The facade of that seems liberating. The truth of the matter is it's not. It's an incredibly enslaving and depraving philosophy to inflict on young people. If you tell them that their lives effectively are entirely up to themselves, that they can be simply ripped apart from any context, be it community, family, church, whatever else, that's an immeasurably cruel thing to do. And you see the results of that in that we have such high rates of depression. Young people are not happy. They're not responding to that. And that almost brings us full circle, really. Why were we asking the question in the first place? Well, where is God? And unless we can answer that in the affirmative, then we needn't wonder why we're in the situation we are, in particular in the West.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it sad that that is the message that young people get? I mean, it's really something that saps the joy out of them. And I've been at two funerals in the last month of young guys who took their own lives, who were fed that same lie that, oh, you know, life is what you make it. And they've been told that from society, from pop culture, what you name it. You know, life is what you make it. Do what makes you happy. But the truth is, God will make you happy. And God will make you happy because He has created you for Himself. He's created you with a plan, and it's a good plan, and it's a plan that leads to your happiness. And I think we often, the message rather, that young people get is that God might have a plan for your life. It's probably boring. Just leave it and do what you want. And it really does leave people in the two cases that I witnessed recently in a very desperate situation.
I think what you said there about it'll probably be boring. It will probably be boring is interesting. And I think if anyone listening is unsure about it, the Catholic life is not a boring life.
But
that's what the world feeds you. The world tells you as well that a normal life is not desirable. So go out. If you're not a celebrity, then you're worthless, you know, or you're not a weirdo, then you're worthless. And
that is it though, isn't it?
What we are saying here is that actually this life that we are living is not boring. Might be normal, might be mundane at times, but it's worth living, and it's good, and in the end there will be an eternal fulfillment there.
Yeah, and at the end of the day there is an eternal life, and no matter how bad things may seem to be going at whatever stage in your life, you have an immortal soul. We all have an immortal soul which is going to live forever, and the choices we make in this world and whether or not we follow God's plan in this world has eternal consequences, and they will lead, if we choose God and we choose to live the Catholic life, they will lead to heaven and happiness forever, and that is what we were made for.
I think that's the thing. So it's easy for us to say, if your life's going well, it's easy to say, you know, everything's got great value, and it's all, you know, and people are listening might be thinking, well, my life isn't in that situation, you know, and we've all been in that situation where your life isn't quite going to plan. But ultimately, as Catholics, we have that assurance of Christ's love and presence in the sacraments and through the church. And so even in the darkest times of your life, when you're thinking, you know, I'm not really sure what the purpose of this is, or what am I supposed to be doing, you still find that consolation in the church, or at least you should try to, because that's what Christ's plan is, like you said, Sean, for our life is to be with Him.
There's a really good prayer by Blessed John Henry Newman. Do you know the name of it?
It's called Some Definite Service.
Yeah. And so I'll just read it out. God has created me to do Him some definite service. He has committed some work to me which He has not committed to another. I have my mission. I may never know it in this life, but I shall be told it in the next. I am a link in a chain, a bond of connection between persons. He has not created me for naught. I shall do good. I shall do his work. I shall be an angel of peace, a preacher of truth in my own place, while not intending it, if I do but keep his commandments. Therefore, I will trust him, whatever I am. I can never be thrown away. If I am in sickness, my sickness may serve him. In perplexity, my perplexity may serve him. If I am in sorrow, my sorrow may serve him. He does nothing in vain. He knows what he is about. He may take away my friends. He may throw me among strangers. He may make me feel desolate, make my spirit sink, hide my future from me. Still, he knows what he is about.
It's an amazing quote.
Amen.
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 So, pray that if you don't know what you're up to.
I'm going to pray that.
Aye. So hopefully that has helped
in some way. Yeah,
yeah, hopefully. And maybe answered some questions.
What's the point?
Why are you here? Well,
I think it's just like the best thing to do. No one ever. I remember the first person to tell me to do this, and it was a big effect on me. That just if you're a Catholic and you're really not sure, contact your local priest and try to meet up with them and talk to them about things. Like, if you're really struggling with what's going on in life, like, priests can seem quite distant sometimes. I know people, we're blessed with knowing quite a few priests through various groups in the church we're involved in and stuff like that. And I know in the normal parish level, sometimes priests can be quite distant, but they're nice people. So
once you break that barrier and actually speak to them, you realise that priests are great.
And they'll be able to tell you a lot more about this than we can, so... Mm.
Mm-hmm.
There's a need for fathers in society, and priests ever so often provide precisely that when it's missing, and that's never been more relevant than today.
Yep. So, there you go. Amen.
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 Have your cake and eat it.
Well, that's true. We can't have it and eat it. So, thanks for listening. I just want to say we've had some feedback about the player. If you're playing it on the web page, if you're listening on Android, what you can do is you can go to the download podcast page on the website and you can right click in it or hold. I think I put the instructions there, so you can download it from there and you can listen to it, and it means that you can sort of play it and pause it and move about a bit better. So just some feedback. We're trying to improve.
Take it on board. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, rate us, invite your friends to like the page and share our stuff and all that kind of...
iTunes.
Yeah. So, here's to life and life to the fullest.
Amen.
Archibald, if you want to make Rory happy, make sure you win at the weekend.